Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
This podcast contains explicit language.
Hey, everybody. Are you looking to reach out and connect and forge a bond with the people who run So That Happened, the famous podcast about stuff that happened in the past? Well, just send us an email to sothathappened@huffingtonpost.com. Send us your comments, your questions, your suggestions. Do not send us your dick pics. And now, back to the show. Remember, no dick pics. So That Happened. This week, the Republican-led House Agriculture Committee began what they termed as a top-to-bottom review of the federal food stamp program. In a surprising twist, the committee's new management has struck a soft and empathetic tone toward a government program they'd previously demonized. We'll talk about this sudden change in disposition. Meanwhile, President Barack Obama and Senator Elizabeth Warren are teaming up on a plan to bring more security to retirees by making it harder for fly-by-night financial advisors to screw their clients for their own personal gain. But why did dozens of Democrats sign a letter opposing this idea? We tried to find out. Finally, the 2016 Invisible Primary continues, and the big winner this week, we are told, is Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker. We'll explain why so many people are telling us that, and we'll also remind you that it is February of 2015, because sometimes it seems that we forget that. I'm Jason Linkins, with Huffington Post reporters Zach Carter and Arthur Delaney. God knows Fox News' Bill O'Reilly will probably tell you that he was here too, because there's no control in that weirdo. But here's what happened first. Good part of whatever day you're listening to this, be it Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, whatever, this is So That Happened, the show about things that happened. I'm Jason Linkins. Today we have our usual crew. Introduce yourself.
I'm Arthur Delaney.
That's Arthur Delaney, guys. And over here?
I'm Zach Carter.
That's Zach Carter. It's all working.
We're all with the Huffington Post, and we're happy to be with you right now.
Thank you for listening.
What a great week for Washington, D.C., because early in the week, we were greeted by the conquering heroes known as Slater Kinney.
Played
two shows at the 9:30 Club at the full height of their powers. And, like, after that, we got legal weed.
I think the latter development was way more important.
All I'm saying is swish, swish. Okay?
I feel like Slater Kinney kind of got robbed on that one. You know, they came to, like, it was like the last Square show they're gonna play in the city, you know?
What do you mean by that?
Well,
next time.
Everybody's going to be high.
Yeah, you're right. We'll all want to hear songs off the woods.
Yeah.
because we'll be so doped up, it'll be important. And also happening at the same time in this city, as we've legalized weed.
Snow.
Well, snow, yeah.
I love it when it snows. Okay, my dog is so happy.
We're talking now about actual snow.
Yeah, not like cocaine.
Not about cocaine. But CPAC is here.
The Conservative Political Action Conference.
Right. Those guys are going to be so high.
The conference is taking place at the Inner Harbor in Baltimore, so better not.
Wait, it's taking place in Baltimore?
The National Harbor, which is in Maryland.
The National Harbor.
Oh, I'm sorry. My bad. It's on the way to Baltimore.
Yeah, it's
across the Potomac from Alexandria.
Yeah, there's a shopping center there and gambling now.
Okay, so not the Inner Harbor where the
I'm sorry.
It's okay. There's two Maryland harbors that
liberal media screws up facts.
Who cares? We're not a geography podcast. No one comes to us looking for latitudes and longitudes.
I can just imagine the Federalists taking us down for getting geography wrong.
Sorry, Molly Hemingway. Sorry.
Once again, you know, media ignorance once again.
It's all, you know, Baltimore.
You haven't lived till you've stood in for the left with a capital L for like an errant tweet or a geography mistake.
It's pretty awesome. It's great. Pretty great.
Anyway, marijuana legal, big deal. End of extremely racist regime of police harassing black people, it has been well documented, who is affected by marijuana criminalization. Amazingly, Republicans in the House decided to, like, threaten the city. Because, like, it's not legal. You can't do it. We're going to throw your mayor in jail. This is what Republican from Utah actually said.
But they did not actually move in Congress on anything, right? They could have challenged the law formally, but they chose not to, right?
They don't have the guts.
Do you know what kind of folk hero Muriel Bowser would have become if she'd been thrown in jail?
It would have been incredible.
Because I sort of got the impression among when the election happened that people were sort of just kind of okay with Muriel Bowser.
She's the mayor of Washington, D.C.
She's the current mayor of Washington, D.C. And I think that, like, it's not as if people were swarming to the battlements for Muriel Bowser. It was more as if, okay, well, she's the Democratic nominee. This is Washington, D.C. Throwing her in jail would have turned her into a folk hero.
And
the best possible thing that ever happened to Muriel
Bowser. It would have been a disaster for the Republican Party, too, because you have a city that has a long history of racial tension with the white, predominantly white Congress in a city that for a long time was majority African-American. Throwing the black mayor in jail because a bunch of white Republicans wanted to tread on D.C.'s not quite state rights, but, you know, at least local political rights, I think would have been a complete disaster for Republicans.
No, Republican leaders like John Boehner, they don't want to talk about this. They think it's a waste of time. They're going to let Jason Chaffetz of Utah, who made the prison threat, he's blowing off steam, and they don't have the guts to deal with it because, you know, they know voters, the tide has turned on support for legal marijuana. So I thought it was great entertainment for them to spice up our legalization with idle threats. And it's a wonderful thing that a harmless plant has been made legal.
Did add some hot sauce to the bouillabaisse that is Washington, D.C.
Yeah, the mumbo sauce.
The mumbo
sauce.
You
might say.
Yes, absolutely.
I gotta figure out how to buy weed now. Is it like in stores now?
Yes.
You just walk into any Chipotle.
You gotta get a doctor to say your back hurts.
Literally, right? Literally. Yeah. And I'm standing in for the left when I convey these facts to everyone. You can walk into any Chipotle in the district and get weed right now. It's awesome.
Oh, CC Molly Hemingway. Media ignorance. No, you need a doctor's note, and then you can buy it, and you can choose what variety of marijuana you want. Do you want a sativa, an indica?
I don't know.
But if you bought it illegally, while that purchase was illegal, it's legal for you to have it, to smoke it. You can grow it in your house. You can smoke it in your house. You can't smoke it on your porch. And I really wouldn't tempt the police because that is the one thing that, you know.
The only thing that should be illegal is the jam band music that naturally flows from these circumstances.
I heartily agree.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely ban jam bands. But in addition, I mean, even for people who don't care about smoking weed, who, like, don't want to go out and smoke it, and even for people who don't like it when other people smoke weed, there is a significant, like, criminal justice, advantage to this. If you talk to prosecutors around D.C., they will say all the time they're having to deal with cases where somebody got beat up by police officers or there's some, you know, trespassing charge or something where someone was clearly just getting harassed by cops and they found some weed on them and that justified the arrest and the treatment. And so this actually does change the relationship between the police and disproportionately people of color in the city and it for the better, I think. And it stops our courts from being jammed up with, you know, pointless cases, throwing people in jail for no reason.
And it stops a lot of people from being forced onto a track where they become more financially – preyed upon financially.
Yeah.
Once you end up in the system, it could cost you down the line in numerous ways. And let's keep with that idea and let's talk about this week in food stamps news.
Oh,
shall we?
It's been a big week. The Republican Party has decided to take another go at food stamps. They fought over food
stamps. Okay, now what do you mean by take another go at food stamps? That they're hungry and they don't have a lot of money and they're going to run out with food stamps and buy some food? What is that? they're going to go at it with knives, it up?
They want food stamp reform. This is their white whale. It's like welfare reform, which is such a rallying cry.
Okay, so what are they doing to eliminate the high rate of food insecurity in America? Because that's how I'd reform it. I'd go to the source. make sure people
they're not doing anything about that.
Oh, okay, well.
But hey, I mean, Republicans have been saying for a long time, I mean, this is, it's not just in Congress, it's also, you know, Fox News has done stuff on, you know, the food stamp surfer. They've sort of attacked people who are on food stamps as lazy. They attack them for what they buy.
Here's the deal.
Like, what's going on?
They fought over food stamps for 2 years and last year passed food stamp reform as part of a farm bill. They had overreached. Eric Cantor blew it. And they tried to get deeper cuts than the Congress could bear because there are too many moderate votes. They wound up with not so big changes to the program. They got a new chairman of the committee that oversees food stamps. His name is Mike Conaway, Republican from Texas, who was with the Cantor camp, the big overreachers, during that farm bill debate, but now has said, we're going to do this again, but we're going to be nice. And he's taken a completely different tone on the issue of food stamps. He said, we don't want to come at this with any preconceived biases against food stamps. He had a hearing on Wednesday where they had a liberal guy talk, Bob Greenstein from the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, you know, the vanguard of the left.
Mm-hmm.
And the only other witness was a professor from the University of Maryland who only modestly criticized food stamps. And he made a great point, which is true, which was that food stamps and other safety net programs the federal government has created since the 60s eradicated starvation in America. We have food insecurity now. We don't have – no one's starving.
You just have malnutrition and worries that you might not get enough.
Well, it's an important thing to remember when they talk about the war on poverty being a failure, when in the 1960s – you would be carrying starved children to the hospital.
Right.
And they'd be refused treatment because they were black. And we don't have that situation anymore. We have the issues Zach mentioned. We have malnutrition. We have food insecurity. These aren't nearly as bad as what there was before. So it's an income maintenance program.
This sounds like a change from operating from a deck of ideological flashcards to an attempt to forge a robust and real connection.
Well, that's the thing.
Are
those cards up the sleeve? And I think many people suspect that they are. At the hearing where Mike Conaway was being so nice and other Republicans struck a moderate tone, there was still a guy, a freshman or sophomore member, who said, well, you know, my constituents see this, people, you know, buying steak and lobster at the grocery store with the food stamp card.
Do they, though? Do they?
I think that does happen a little bit.
Okay. But
it's famous to just complain about it, just posit that it's endemic.
Can we also just say, so what if people want to buy lobster? Like, the food stamp is not like – it's not like you don't get, like, incremental pieces of food with your food stamps. There's a certain amount of money. It's not like you get X number of meals, and so you're gaming the system by getting lobster. Like, if you get lobster because it's your kid's birthday or something, and that's what they want to have on their freaking birthday, that means you have less money in your account for the rest of the week, and you're going to have to save on it. I mean, it's for programs that are supposedly for conservatives who are supposedly caring about individual liberty, that kind of food stamp demonization I just find hard to swallow.
I think that there's a couple ways of looking at it. I think that probably the critics of this suggest, oh, the reason that the average food stamp holder can go out and buy lobster with their food stamps, and I imagine they think they do it week to week, is that they don't really need food stamps. They have enough money to buy groceries, and they're just using food stamps to buy that one odd lobster. I tend to think, like you, it's – They have a – they're blowing out their food budget. That's on them. but what's interesting about that is that, okay, so the average person is working an angle to get that one nice plump bonus thing every X number of days. And I think about all the rich industries we subsidize – it's like
– oh, right.
I did interview a woman.
Everyone gets a free lobster now and then from the federal government. It's crazy.
I interviewed a woman who did use food stamps to buy Alaskan king crab legs. That's like the totemic thing that's in every anti-food stamp at the supermarket story. It was
– farm subsidies themselves.
No, let me – it was –
are like a lobster
she
for
bought,
a lot of people.
She bought the crab legs because it was for Christmas – because it was the only thing her daughter asked for, because her husband was a cook and knew how to make good food. It was for Christmas. and the thing is, people who resent this will not be happy until the supplemental nutrition assistance program is changed from SNAP into the Beans and Rice Program, or BARP.
Right. They want to see at the grocery store people with food stamps buying shitty food.
Rice and beans.
Stuff that sucks. Because there's a lot of people who think that, well, one important component if you're on any kind of supplemental program from the government, any kind of government subsidy, is there has to be a stigma and you have to be sort of ashamed. And again, I think about all the big industries that never get shamed. And I also think about the fact the same people who talk about shame as a motivating force to get the poor out of poverty, we shame them for their dumb statements all the time.
Well,
does it work? Is it working? Do you guys feel the shame? Because I've been really shaming your ass, and you haven't changed one fucking bit.
The flip side of this, though, which is a little confounding, is at the hearing on food stamps that happened Wednesday, there was a huge crowd of people waiting in the lobby before they opened the doors. And they were all food industry lobbyists.
Of course.
And I was talking to them.
Do they actually have homeless people stand in line for them?
This wasn't,
before they showed up?
They didn't at this hearing.
Because
but
that's
that is
another
a thing.
Great Washington, D.C. tradition.
But they were, it was like the beverage industry. And no one has said what Republicans will do, but they sort of know from what has been discussed in the past that what if it's something like banning people from buying soda with food stamps? Mm-hmm.
Do you know what the
and they're really on guard. So, but industry reaps the $78 billion in benefits that go out, you know, go to big companies ultimately.
Do you know what the strongest lobby in Washington is? It's the lack of self-awareness lobby. They're so fucking powerful.
Well, wait, but let's see here, because there are, I mean, I've been dumping on, you know, conservative food stamp shamers here, but there are people, there are conservatives who I think make good faith arguments about improving the program. You know,
I was talking about a weird segment of
the dominant conservative voices I think are the food stamp shamers. But you know, like Tim Carney at the Examiner said, you know, maybe it's just better, you know, if people are making such a big fuss about lobster and stuff every now and then, maybe it's just better if we just give people money.
That is why the public policy expert whose name is Douglas Besharov yesterday said, we must recognize that this is not an anti-hunger program anymore. It's an income maintenance program.
Mm-hmm.
So perhaps you would actually just give people money and take away this whole EBT card situation. Maybe that's something you could do. And he thought we should – what he said was we should actually try to nudge more people who receive these benefits into the workforce, although there did seem to be a consensus between him and Bob Greenstein that no one knows how to do that. No one knows how to increase workforce participation short of just taking all the benefits away, which neither of them thought was a solution.
I would put a guy like Tim Carney at the top of this discussion if I had the opportunity to, because there's no one else who understands what I've been talking about like he does.
Tim's a smart guy, and he does like sincerely care about poor people. I think a lot of his ideas are misguided and confused, but he does care. He's not like out there trying to. He's not making makers and takers arguments like
exactly.
Paul Ryan in 2010. Like, look at all these mooters.
He also understands what I'm talking about powerful lobbies, powerful industries coming in, schlepping off their share of the cream. He understands that. He gets that. So where do you see this heading?
It's
are we going to see the flashcards?
You know what's kind of a weird thing is that Conaway and the Agriculture Committee are moving so slow that I don't think this year there will be anything on food stamps. However, there is a separate budget process. You know, in response to the president submitting his budget to Congress,
right?
The Budget Committee will create a budget, and they could instruct the 12 separate authorizing committees with jurisdictions over different parts of the federal government to have they're called reconciliation directives, and they could tell that committee authorize this amount of spending for next year, and they could require the Agriculture Committee to find savings. So it's possible that there could be cuts to food stamps from a separate track that the Agriculture Committee would have to deal with, even though Chairman Conaway has taken this totally thoughtful, you know, at least ostensibly thoughtful and conscientious approach. So that's something to watch for.
Right. Well,
could be a ruse. Another committee could just do something mean later.
If there's one thing our government's good at, if there's one thing our Congress is good at, it's coming up with redundant means to circumvent thoughtfulness.
That's true. We're really good at that.
Okay, moving on to another hot topic this week, retirement security and our pal Elizabeth Warren.
Yeah, it's been a very interesting week.
Who's not running for president?
So we have not talked to her about that, but I'll
believe it when I see that thing that can't be seen. I think she's running.
So here's what's really interesting today. I think the White House is pretty eager to have events where they're seen as being on the same page as Elizabeth Warren because she's been
because of Katie, wasn't it Katie at the State of the Union? The woman that kept talking about who made it in Minnesota, Katie. I probably don't have her name right.
Don't remember that. But Elizabeth Warren has been really beating the crap out of the White House on a lot of economic issues lately. There was a derivatives piece of a spending bill that it was basically the bill was going to reinstate subsidies for Wall Street trading and the riskiest types of derivatives. And Elizabeth Warren had fought to keep that out. And the White House said it wasn't worth fighting over. Let's just let it go.
Wait a minute. And how did the this Wall Street subsidy come to light? I can't seem to remember.
Oh, yeah. Who was it?
Who was it who broke that story?
Yeah, that was actually...
whoever it was so clever.
It was... guys, you know what? I think I broke that story.
Yeah.
I don't know if I've mentioned
that before. Again. Tell us again how you did it. Anyway.
So, all that said, the White House has been trying to say, you know, look, and the State of the Union, they talk about, you know, middle-class economics. They're trying to do things that are sort of taking a more populist line on economic policies. And what they did this week is basically say, look, a rule that we proposed in 2010 and then scuttled immediately turns out to be a really good idea. And not only are we going to get behind it, we're going to invite Elizabeth Warren to come and say what a good idea it is. And the idea is really simple. If you have an IRA retirement type account, your broker, your investment advisor is not required to manage that account in your best interests. They are actually allowed to sell you products based on their own financial situation. So if a company is saying, hey, if you can just get a whole bunch of people into this fund here, I'll give you a new car or something, they can do that and they don't even have to tell you. So that is a lot of accounts are
managed.
Here's
how this works. You will go looking for a financial advisor for your financials. You want to invest money and figure out where to put your money for the future. And there's all these guys out there. It's like, yeah, I'll be your financial advisor. I'll do it for free. But the guy is actually an insurance salesman.
Yeah.
And there's no requirement that they disclose it. It's actually as simple as it sounds.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
That the rule requires these financial advisors to act in the financial best interest of their clients. We don't have that right now.
Which is astounding.
I agree.
And what is the figure?
financial advisors were just allowed to screw their clients.
Yes, and it's, I think to be clear, a lot of financial advisors are great and do manage accounts.
Well, you can hire a financial
advisor.
Not
all financial advisors.
You can hire one who you pay. In hopes that means you're not, someone's working for free might be more aggressive in steering you into his
or firm. Just working for very little. And yeah. And this is, I mean, but we know that, I mean, the White House just did a very substantive study about this, very rigorous, where it said, you know, about $17 billion a year, every year, is being drained from Americans' savings accounts. And you don't even know that it's happening because you're getting put into some stupid, crappy fund. And, you know, it's getting a 3 or 4% return. You're like, okay, I'm making money. My advisor made a good pick.
Right.
If you don't know that the stock market is doing 5 or 6% that year or 7 or 8%, you don't know what a dog you've been pushed into. And it looks like you can see the numbers getting bigger. And you're like, okay, I guess it's okay.
So President Obama with Elizabeth Warren want to enforce this rule that would force financial advisors to put as a priority the fiduciary duty they have to the people that are
how come they can just up and do that? Why doesn't this have to go through Congress?
Well, the Department of Labor has had the regulatory authority over this through congressional legislation for decades, actually. So the Congress gave them the power to define the types of fiduciary duties that are necessary for different investment advisors. And in 2010, the Department of Labor was like, hey, this is really silly. You know, for pension funds, if you were, you know, fortunate enough to be in a big pension account, almost nobody these days is anymore. Those pension advisors have to act in the best interests of their clients. Why don't individual retirement account managers have to do the same thing? And as soon as they put forward that rule in 2010, the financial industry just went bonkers. I mean, they lobbied like crazy to shut it down. And they even one of the things that's most astounding to me about this is, Arthur, you were talking there about the sort of the really scuzzy guys who were like offering free services and stuff while getting, you know, essentially kickbacks.
Yeah, but hey, you got to buy life insurance.
So a lot of Democrats came out and said, you know, these types of, you know, this rule could be a problem because it will limit access to financial advice for low-income people and particularly people of color.
Record scratch. But haven't we already established that financial advice was shitty?
That's exactly the problem, is that those accounts look like they're inexpensive to people, but they're actually not. They're actually very expensive. And this rule, if it's crafted correctly, would just ban people from getting ripped off. And so the Democrats who were coming out, I mean, dozens of House Democrats came out in opposition to this. There were 10 Senate Democrats, 3 of whom, interestingly, are no longer in the Senate because they lost their elections. They were very worried that there was going to be some sort of, you know, they claimed to be worried that, you know, all of a sudden all of these poor people were not going to get access to crappy financial advice and be ripped off anymore.
That's what's amazing.
Why'd
to
you
me.
Take away poor people's freedom?
Yeah.
So exactly. What's amazing to me is when I think about the one act play version of this, it's Obama and Warren saying we need to have a rule that requires financial advisors to give good advice to people, and these Democrats are saying, but wait, that could ruin the whole bad advice industry.
Right.
And scene.
And scene. Everyone dies alone.
And let's be clear. What's the reason I'm focusing on Democrats here is because whenever there's something that would protect consumers at the expense of Wall Street profits, you can expect Republicans to come out against it. I mean, that's happened with Dodd-Frank. It happened with the creation of the new Consumer Protection
Bureau. Yeah, the true choke point is conservative Democrats.
And that is real. And what was remarkable about this is they got very progressive Democrats to sign letters on this stuff. I mean, Karen Bass, Barbara Lee. I mean, some of the most liberal members of Congress were signing this. I think if you talked to their offices and their offices wouldn't actually talk to me, my suspicion is, you know, they had no idea what they were signing. This happens sometimes. People just get on a letter. They know a lobbyist or whatever. And it's,
yeah,
you know, whatever.
That's
all my
why
friends
I don't
are
sign
it.
Petitions on the street, because I don't want to find out 3 years from now that, like,
you're a truther.
I'm a 9/11 truther or something.
But it's tough. You know, members of Congress.
What? I thought it was funding football uniforms for low-income schools. No. Sorry, you are now a 9/11 truther. Congratulations.
Well, and this is why staff is important, right?
Welcome to the InfoWars.
You know, members of Congress typically have staffers who are experts in this area. They're not easily hoodwinked. So I don't really know why all of these ostensibly progressive members of Congress were on board with this. They are not talking about it at all right now, however. They definitely do not want to be seen as being against the rule that both Obama and Elizabeth Warren are into, because that's a clear signal. Like, you know, in Congress, this is clear in a lot of different policy issues, but particularly on financial stuff, a lot of people just don't have a freaking clue what is going on with this stuff. And they just basically trust other lawmakers who they know about this stuff and take their cues from them. And so when you see Elizabeth Warren saying this is actually a good idea, I think most of those Democrats are like, ah, God, I wish I hadn't signed that letter.
And can't they just write another letter that said, hey, I was stupid?
Sign no take here. Backs, Jason.
But that's the thing. That's what's weird. What people should say in that situation when they get called out in stories is, I signed a letter and I should have read it more carefully. This is a great rule and I support it. And then stories like the one I wrote this week where I'm just shaming them are not as interesting. So anyway, this is a really big deal because, you know, it's a huge shift, not just for those Democrats who are flipping. It's a huge shift for the administration, which scuttled this rule in 2010. Right. 2010. It means they've had 4 years to put this thing out. And now they're saying that they will actually pursue it. Interestingly, that Cromnibus bill that we were talking about earlier, there was a provision that Republicans had been pushing that would have banned the Department of Labor from doing this. So the Republicans actually did try to sort of strangle this in the cradle back in December. But Nancy Pelosi was able to strip that out. So that's, you know, that at the time when that happened, I think a lot of people, including myself, were like, well, I'm glad Nancy Pelosi was able to get rid of that. But, you know, the administration hasn't done anything for 4 years. So who cares? And I was totally wrong. Because now it's happening, and it's probably very good. This is the biggest thing Obama has done on financial reform since Dodd-Frank. It's basically the only thing he's done.
But it's the biggest. But
it's a pretty big deal. You're talking about $17 billion a year for people. I mean, that's a lot of money.
Like, the first scarf I knit will be the biggest scarf I knit.
Yeah. I mean, the other problem here is that, remember, most people don't even have a 401k, much less an IRA. I think only 33% of people have an individual of households have an individual retirement account, which is terrifying. It's why Social Security is such a big anti-poverty program. Most people just don't have any money in the bank for when they retire. But this is one way to make for at least people who are able to set aside money, you know, at least they're not getting ripped off.
Can I ask you one last question on this?
Mm-hmm.
The existence of these bad financial planners, people screwing their clients, where was Adam Smith's invisible hand? I thought he was supposed to carry us.
You know, the invisible hand thing is, I think, widely misunderstood. When he talks about the invisible hand in The Wealth of Nations, he's actually talking about the value of investing locally in Scotland and saying that when you invest locally, you get better results. The invisible hand of the market will lead people to want to invest locally and not in other crazy places because they'll get to live in the community where their investment happened. So they'll get to enjoy the benefits of whatever, the new business that started. You know,
are you saying historical things don't always map onto the present?
Yeah,
I hate that.
I
don't want to hear that.
That the whole invisible hand thing became a big deal in the 20th century with economics textbooks. Actually, so that was, you know, I'm oversimplifying here, but that idea of the invisible hand, I don't think Adam Smith. I think he's a smarter guy than current right wing economists would have you believe.
It's okay for you to oversimplify. I was asking a goofy Socratic question for kicks.
Yeah, and he gave you a glove slap.
That's exactly. So one last thing, I guess we got to talk about 2016 and 2015.
Wait a minute! It's 2015. Why are we talking about 2016?
No, it's not. Your calendar is incorrect.
Yeah, it's an error.
Not the current year.
No. Guys, listen. The invisible primary is happening, and some of it is somewhat important.
Scott Walker's whooping butt.
He has been, to the extent that there
really?
Is, to the extent that there is an amount of butt to be whooped, Scott Walker has whooped the lion's share of the available butt.
Maybe you understand.
Like, that is the way to look at it. A lot of people are saying, oh, he's the front runner. The race hasn't started. It's like, that's like saying, you know, there's a preseason favorite.
Sports two different sports metaphors.
Yeah, sorry. Mixing our sports metaphors.
It's funny, we also call it a race. Why is that the metaphor for a political contest? But regardless, But last week, guys, everybody was telling me that Jeb Bush was the guy. Has it all changed in a week?
Yeah, here's the thing. Here's the interesting thing about
Scott Walker is the Bush Slayer.
He is so far the Bush Slayer. So there's a couple things that Scott Walker has worked to his most recent advantage. The first thing that he did was he managed that whole evolution flap. Remember, he went to England and
he had a gaffe.
He punted. It was a gaffe. He punted on evolution, and he got a lot of people talking about it and got into the gaffe cycle. And this worked to his advantage wonderfully. because his brand, Scott Walker's brand, is I have faced the liberals and I have won and they want to tear me down and they'll go to an extreme to do it, even if it's goofy shit.
So his gaffe was, in fact, a flea flicker that tricked the secondary into rushing.
And scored a sports ball goal. Yes.
He got a three-pointer.
Yeah, yeah, it's good. People need to remember that. People need to remember that coming out of 2012, the Republican Party was beaten down and abused for and afraid. And they wrote that thing called that became colloquially known as the RNC autopsy.
Oh, that is just a liberal media thing.
Of course, of course. It's the Growth and Opportunity Project. Uh-huh. And the DNC actually just published their own autopsy. Well, their preview to a forthcoming autopsy that, frankly, is not yet as rich and nutritive and substantive as the RNC's own. So they need to work on that because they have problems of their own. But what one of the things that you read the Growth and Opportunity Project, it's a lot of we learned lesson, we humbly submit to these ideas, we need to change.
We must support the middle class.
And here's the thing, most Republicans are kind of somewhere in
– run the ball.
Most Republicans are sort of betwixt and between to what extent do we really need to change. Scott Walker is the one guy who's like, fuck change, I'm perfect. I'm perfect. Seriously, he beat down a recall election. He's taken all sorts of fire, and all he's done is impress donors and work the angle, and he's become the conservative folk hero in this election.
I mean, he
the
is one guy a very liberal state. Come on.
The one guy who he is, but he's the one guy who doesn't have to pretend like he took 2012 seriously and is like, well, we got to really face facts and change, blah, blah, blah. Scott Walker's the boldest love candidate.
Oh, so he's untainted by 2012. So is Jeb Bush.
Well, okay. Now, here's the key difference between
– what's that last name that Jeb Bush has again? I feel like I've heard that before.
Yeah, exactly.
Is that
– exactly.
Bush. Where does that – why is that familiar?
Walker's in the other Bush's name.
It's the saying, two in the bush is worth one in the hand.
Also, yes. Jeb Walker's walking around. Sorry, did I just say Jeb Walker?
Jeb Walker is pushing around.
It all does blur together. Marijuana was just legalized, guys. I'm not going to get everything right. Okay?
Liberal ignorance.
Because I love the marijuana. No, Jeb Bush comes to this with a few deficits. He's on what's widely perceived by the Republican base as the wrong side of the immigration battle. He's on the wrong side, based upon what the GOP base believes, of the Common Core battle. Those are two things that he kind of owns. He's got to walk the walk with. Scott Walker, he doesn't have to walk the walk with that shit.
But Jeb Bush is on the right side of all the money.
He is. And that's the advantage he has. But consider this. Earlier this week, we saw public policy polling release a poll that put Scott Walker at the top of the polls. It was Walker, Carson, then Jeb.
Sounds like a troll poll.
How close?
They're all okay. Look, they're all to a certain extent troll polls if we allow them to be. Uh-huh. And if we allow that, if we look at that poll and say, "Damn, okay, Scott Walker winner won the week. He's the front runner." Then we're screwing ourselves.
That's what we just said.
No, but here's.
I disagree.
We talked about. I've talked about this a bunch. Early polls are not. They do not correspond to late results. They're way off the mark. If we just look at those top line things, if we dig down deeper is where we find the useful stuff. And here's the useful stuff. If you look at in Iowa, approval, disapproval, Scott Walker is beloved in Iowa. I think he has a 40% difference between approval and disapproval. Jeb Bush, people are much more on the fence. He's only 1 point between approval and disapproval. And that's where that stuff starts to matter, because that's where they're all going to have their first big contest and set the tone for the race. And Walker right now walks into it feeling beloved. He walks into it feeling beloved because of things like that evolution flap. Jeb Bush still not – I'm not going to say Jeb Bush took on water, but he's still got to paint the hull a little bit, scrape the barnacles off.
No. Could I please have a sports metaphor?
Oh, I'm sorry.
He needs a rebuilding season.
Focus on defense.
He needs to focus on defense.
All right, so I'll grant you Scott Walker's got the intangibles, but I really think it's going to come down to who wants this more.
50-50 balls.
Thanks, Dick Vitale.
Who's willing to give it 110%? I love Dick Vitale. No one is more excited about college basketball than he is, and I don't care if he's annoying to other people. All of that said, But what about the views of establishment Beltway, you know, parliamentarians? I mean, surely it has to matter. You know, maybe it doesn't matter to people in Iowa. Maybe people in Iowa who don't believe in evolution get really psyched when Scott Walker says something dumb about evolution or says something dumb about whether he not knowing whether Obama is a Christian or not. But surely there are donors and elites who are like, ah, this guy's talk is not going to play well in a presidential election.
I feel like it's still kind of early. And one of the things that I was skeptical about was Jeb Bush raising money in this kind of old school way that his brother did with the Rangers and the mm-hmm. With the Wizards.
Yeah.
I forget all the levels of.
I don't think Wizards was one of them.
I'm pretty
Grand
sure.
Grand Dragon, not one of them.
Khaleesi's. He was raising money in this very old school way, but people have been impressed by his ability to go out and get money from grandees, and, you know, establishment elite mm-hmm. Republican grandees. And I think that there's maybe something to be said about that, but you really think that like a big Bush donor is like, oh, what does it for me is that I think Bush has articulated a better position on Darwinism. I really don't think that plays into
but don't
it.
Don't you get? Don't you? I mean, if I were a Republican, like old donor guy, I would be really annoyed if the standard bearer for my party was going around making an ass out of himself.
Yeah, no, you wouldn't.
On stuff like evolution,
totally.
The standard bearers have been clowning themselves on science for decades, and no
I
one
guess
cares.
This is why I'm not a Republican. But
it's not like the liberal media understands evolution anyway.
It's like you start out as a tadpole, right? And then you're a monkey, and then you're born.
Yeah, define mitochondria, Zach.
I've never seen a monkey turn into a human being, so that theory is bunk.
Mitochondria used to be a life form, right? Like an independent like type of life form.
An important step in evolution, yeah. Yes.
Okay.
College credit. This is embarrassing. You know who didn't? Scott Walker, because school is for suckers.
Also, he wants to cut.
That was the other thing he won on.
He's cutting the budget for the Wisconsin college system by like 13%.
And I still don't know if you're going to lay a glove on Scott Walker over the fact that he didn't graduate from college.
I
don't think it matters
work.
At all. Yeah.
Yeah. He wins again. He is the Bush Slayer.
Yeah. See, this
is. I mean, he's what he would look at me like, look, you went to college. Are you the freaking governor of any state? No. Okay. Shut up. And that would be a good comeback.
It would be a pretty good comeback.
Governor is a pretty strong resume item.
It's better than college.
To be honest, I'm still looking for the guy who's going to be the Walker Slayer in this.
Well, it's going to be Jeb Bush.
Are you going to call the primary this early?
This means Chris Christie is like in trouble, right? I mean, this also happened this week, right?
Yeah, Chris Christie is really taking on water. He's, you know, he's been had gotten the lion's share of the trouble at home stories, and he's had trouble on the stump too. He had opportunities to take home some big donors, but they've all sort of migrated.
And I don't think we've gotten to the end of the Oppo file, because remember when Mitt Romney was talking, they didn't want him.
Right. This was stuff I believe VP. That was reported in the game changing book.
Yeah, and I don't
the double daily Debbie Downer.
I may be mistaken, but I read that there was more. There were other things that the Romney campaign was unhappy about.
Right. There was stuff in Christie's, you know, back pages that made the Romney team very skittish. Bear in mind that Mitt Romney, if you add chocolate to milk, he's like, whoa, is that legal? What you just did there? Yeah, Mitt, taste it. No, tastes too good. Tastes too delicious. But I do think, but we don't know what that stuff is. And that stuff was always kind of like in the back of my mind. Well, there's more to be told. There's more to the.
But we've had the mega hit piece from the New York Times about how he just like loves fancy planes,
yeah,
and hanging out with celebrities. That was damaging. Well, I don't think he's recovered.
Yeah,
and his pension cuts. I mean, refusing to make contributions to the state pension fund, mm-hmm. being ruled illegal by a judge is. I think that hurts. I mean, how are you gonna? You can just see the social.
Oh,
security
I don't know. Public sector work.
What's kind of funny to me is
are you gonna manage? So how are you gonna fix Social Security if you can't even
all
you,
the stuff
illegally
I
running
I
your
don't
own
think
pension
you've
account?
Got,
all run, the stuff that made
run into the ground. It sounds great.
All the stuff that made Chris Christie, for a moment, maybe too early, such a cause celeb, the fact that he would yell at teachers, the fact that it was so real and so gritty. It's funny, Walker's walked away with all that stuff.
Okay, so to recap,
Walker's become the guy. And Christie now kind of looks like the pale imitation of Walker.
So Walker.
One thing I will say for Christie, though,
is
that one thing that has been talked about is what a decent job he's done running the Republican Governors Association. The irony has been to me, I see Christie as a guy who's basically proven that he's better at being the guy behind the guy than the guy in front. And it's funny to think about how Christie, managing the RGA so well, may actually help put a rival, Walker, ahead of him for the White House job.
To recap, Scott Walker survived after the liberal media tried to rock his boat. Chris Christie is taking on water, and Jeb Bush is painting his boat.
Yes.
Stripping the barnacles.
He's stripping the barnacles off the hull.
Weather stripping.
All right. I think that covers it.
Thanks. Thanks for being here. And thanks for listening. I was here with Arthur Delaney, senior marijuana poverty reporter, and Zach Carter, senior synthesizer programmer.
Yes, that's my new title.
Yeah, and ancient regime exploiter.
Mm.
And I'm Jason Lincoln's, the guy who talks.
Master of puppets.
Yes, that's going on my card right now. Thanks, guys. So that's what happened this week. This podcast was produced and edited by Ibrahim Balki, with technical direction from Brad Shannon and assistance from Christine Canetta and Adriana Usero. I'm Jason Lincolns. This week we were joined by HuffPost senior politics reporters Zach Carter and Arthur Delaney. So That Happened is available on iTunes. Check us out in the iTunes store and look for the Huffington Post's whole family of podcasts. Subscribe and tell your friends. If there's something you'd like to hear us talk about, send an email to sothathappened@huffingtonpost.com. As always, thanks so much for listening, and we miss you already.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real frank discussions, talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics, all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.